know he's right. Who here is here outside of a mom? In other words, who here got here without a mom helping them in some way? You're right, nobody. Each one of us is here because of our moms. And so I think it's right, it's fitting, it's good that we take time to acknowledge that we have moms and their work, the work that they do. I'm going to read a couple of verses from Proverbs. Just, you probably know the passage. It's one that is often read on Mother's Day, and I think it's fitting. At first, I was thinking of closing with it, but my wife, a mother, said, "You know, maybe you should open with it." And so I thought I wouldn't go against her better judgment. So Proverbs chapter 31 speaks of a wife of noble character. And when it comes to Mother's Day, most of us are thinking of something in a reflective manner in such a way that we want to honor our moms. And so verse 10, I'm just going to read a few verses. Verse 10 says, "A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies." True. Jump over to verse 20. "She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy." Every single one of us has probably been that needy person, whether it's been as a child or even as we've been older. We've been able to look to our moms, and they've helped us in a time of need. Verse 29, "Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate." Just words there to remind us. Happy Mother's Day, by the way, to all you moms out there. We definitely do appreciate you, even though 99.99% of the time you probably don't feel appreciated, and perhaps rightly so. The mother's role in our society is a pretty important role. You know, in our day and age, you could type in, what is a mother? Guess what kind of a definition you'd find on the internet? It's a woman in relation to her child. Is that how you want to be recognized? That's the definition of a mother. That's true, but it's so much more, right? A mother is, the definition of mom or mother is so much more than simply a blood relation. And that's what each of us remember when it comes to acknowledging that we have a mom. So no, mom is not just a free pass into the world. She's much more than that. And so we appreciate it. We thank you. I didn't plan to speak on mothers, but what I'm planning to speak about or speak on definitely does include moms. We're going to be looking at Proverbs chapter 9, where wisdom is personified as a woman. Go figure. I didn't plan that. This was just the next message that I had planned to share for today, and it happens to be Mother's Day. Chapter 9 goes on to imagine this wisdom as a woman, like I said, and it gives imagery, but then it goes on to give us an imagery of foolishness or folly. And so today, we're going to contrast wisdom with foolishness. And this has nothing to do with mothers, by the way, but wisdom in this chapter and chapter 8 is personified as a woman in a good way. So I often begin with a question before I start, and here it is. I'll give you a bit of context. So we live in a world that's driven by unfair comparisons. We live in a world where there's wickedly gained wealth and personal happiness at any cost. We all know that that's not new. So in that context, how can the believing world, how can the church bring necessary change? What can we do about that? How can we change what appears to be a complete collapse in ethical behavior? We, the church, I don't just mean this building. I mean around the world, the universal church, the believing world. I believe this is a question that we need to ask ourselves when it comes to believers. How do we have an impact in the world and in our community? You ever thought about that? How can I have an impact in my environment? So we're already in the year 2018. There was a time in my life where I really didn't think that the world would make it this far. You can laugh at me if you want, but I really did think that. I wasn't one of those people who thought it was going to come to an end in 1999. That's not what I thought. But we're in 2018. You know, you can look back, you can look at movies, and even in the year 2001, they've got like floating cars and all kinds of things. They have no idea, right? You think, man, if it's like that in 2001, what's it going to be like in 2018? Well, the year's already on its way. Perhaps many of us even made promises, New Year's resolutions, and so on. Perhaps we've even made some changes. Maybe we've even been able to keep some of the promises. But in all likelihood, this year will have just as many failures as last year. That's the reality. That's the reality. In a nutshell, it means that humanity is doomed to self-destruct. That's our outcome, apart from God, apart from wisdom. No matter how hard or how good we try to be, we'll self-destruct. So we're watching the series Guardrails this morning. We started this morning over at Emmaus, and they're really good. I believe you're going through them here in your ABF as well. I would recommend that everyone watch those. They're really good. They're basic. They're very applicable. But they really, really speak to where we are at today as far as putting up some guardrails in your life. So how can we bring necessary change to a morally collapsing culture? You don't have to answer that out loud, but just think about that. How can we bring a change where there's a new course set in our life, new direction possibly, and a better destination reached? How can the church bring that change? You know, this is probably a much more difficult task than you realize. How can I change my community? How can I change my environment, my workplace, the world perhaps, a city, a country? You think, that's never going to happen. That's how difficult this task really is, to be a change agent in this world. Our family can't even agree on what we want to eat. How can one person or how can a church bring change to a culture? You say, well, yeah, it is hard. It is hard. Proverbs chapter 9 can be divided into at least two parts. And if you've read it or if you've already taken a glance at it, I think you'd see that. 1 through 12 illustrates godly wisdom. And the other part, 13 through 18, deals with wisdom the ungodly wisdom or wickedness, sorry. But the principle from that chapter is actually quite clear. In fact, it's very easy to discern. What am I supposed to learn from this chapter? But putting it into daily practice, that's where it's tough. That's where it's hard. And that's what the Proverbs are all about. They're very practical statements. But how do we put that into practice? So we're going to read I'll read verses 1 through 6. Hopefully I can follow my own pattern here. Sometimes thoughts come to mind and then I have to change what I had planned. But we're going to read verses 1 through 6 and hopefully we'll get all the verses read. And then we'll go to several other passages in the New Testament that hopefully bring clarity to what wisdom here is being illustrated as. So let me read verses 1 through 6. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out its seven pillars. You know, you read verse 1, and you're like, what in the world is that all about? She has prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her maids, and she calls from the highest point of the city. Let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. Come, eat. Eat my food and drink the wine I've mixed. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of understanding. By the way, the last part of verse 6 there is probably the key. Walk in the way of understanding. Key. So it's depicted as a woman, wisdom. But here's what you want to imagine. She's living in a home of space. So lots of space, no confinement. She's living in a home of luxury. Everything's good. She's living in an extravagant home. There's an overwhelming amount of benefits. And then there's freedom. That's what you want to picture. In fact, what we're supposed to catch from this proverb, wisdom is very desirable because it has much to offer. Now, which one of us would look at space and say, no way, I want to live inside a box? Nobody. and so on and so on. We wouldn't do that with any of these things, luxury, extravagance, benefits, wisdom. We'd say, I want all of them. Well, that's what it is. Wisdom is desirable, and so we should seek it. So let me just clarify a little bit, verses 1 and 2. The 7 is not about a number of pillars. You're not to picture a house that has 7 pillars, and this is what makes it wise. The idea is that in Hebrew poetry, 7 is used as perfection. The number 7 is simply used as perfection. And so the idea is something like this. Perfection has set its pillars in place. Okay. Well, that makes a little more sense. But if you don't know anything about foundation, all of this stuff ties together. And so perfection, in other words, is lacking nothing. And so the house is perfectly built. There's no flaws. That's the idea. The table is abundantly set and a feast is prepared. You got to picture a banquet here, except one without a table. That would have been the literal context of when this person was writing. They didn't sit around tables with chairs. They just kind of sat on the floor and fellowship together in that way. But table is our English translation, and that's okay. That's okay. So wisdom's call, verses 3 through 6, is to everyone. It's not just to some. The call is across the board. The contrast, you want to catch the contrast, is between simple and those with understanding. And simply put, simple means, in this context, foolish. Those who are foolish and those who have understanding. That's really the contrast that you want to catch. So after setting the meal, the guests are invited, and from the rooftops, the invitation is sent out to come to this place, this beautiful, large place that is perfectly established. That's the idea. Wisdom is calling out to all of us. Come, because it's perfect. Let's read verses 7 through 10. Whoever corrects a mocker, this is kind of a bit of a section here that seems out of place, but it does make sense. Whoever corrects a mocker invites insult. Whoever rebukes a wicked man incurs abuse. Do not rebuke a mocker, or he will hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Instruct a wise man, and he will be wiser still. Teach a righteous man, and he will add to his learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. And so it makes sense. It's just, again, it's contrasting the two. Contrast just means to separate. And then you get to see, whoa, they're very different. Wisdom and foolishness. So that's, again, what you want to see here. If there's one thing that you want to learn about wisdom, it's this. It's in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. So acquiring wisdom begins with knowledge. And Proverbs 1:7 says this, the beginning of knowledge is the fear of the Lord. If you can get that one figured out, you're going to be okay. If you can get Proverbs 1:7 figured out as it applies to your life, you'll be okay. And then it goes on and teaches us that wisdom is actually mindful and uses its surroundings. And you can apply that to your life. You can actually take in wisdom and use it for your life. We're just setting some context here. We'll get to some other passages in a moment. So how do we use our surroundings? Well, here's an example. A wise church will counter culture, but not be at war with it. What in the world? What did you just say? A wise church will try to counter culture, but they won't be at war with it. And here's what I mean by that. If culture is taking a turn which is causing a lot of Christians to stumble and to fall, the church should find a way to counter that. They should find a way to counter that without being at war with people. Well, how do you do that? That's why I said that's the tough part. How do we do that? We can easily take culture, not easily, but we can take culture and lead it in a direction. We see this every day. But it's tough. It's tough to do it without hurting it. Another example, a wise church will proclaim the gospel, but they won't harm people with it. A lot of people have been harmed with the gospel, and I'm not kidding, because it's been shared in such a way that it's turned people off. And by the way, by nature of the gospel, it's an offensive message. So it's not a surprise, but you have to find a way to share the gospel with people as to not turn them away, which takes wisdom. So turn to Matthew chapter 11. This will just help you as an encouragement. If our God, if our Savior himself went through difficulty, don't be surprised when you do. I'll read verses 18 and 19, Matthew chapter 11. Here's Jesus speaking. He says, "For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say he has a demon." In other words, John kept himself from a bunch of things that the culture was doing, and they accused him. Verse 19, "The Son of Man came eating and drinking," and so Jesus actually mixed right in to the culture to reach people. And they accuse him of being a glutton and a drunkard. He was a friend of tax collectors and sinners. If you know anything about them, they were the lowest in society. So he was accused of, it seems like no matter what you do, you're between a rock and a hard place. But the verse I want, or the line I want you to catch is, "But wisdom is proved right by her actions." Now, it doesn't matter what people accuse you of, it's what you do that makes the difference. That's the idea. It's what you do, and we all know that. So what we do really does matter. So now let's go back to Proverbs. You know that our own king was accused of things that were just not true. We know that. And so I want that to be an encouragement to you so that as you're making choices, as you're living your life, you'll recognize even when people are after you, people are hurting you, you can still make good choices. Let's read verses 11 through 18. That way we've got the entire proverb, and then we'll look at a bunch of different passages. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 11. "For through me your days will be many, and years will be added to your life." For through who? Wisdom. Through wisdom. "If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you are a mocker, you alone will suffer." Now here it's using woman in the contrast, a woman in the contrasted sense. So it's contrasting wisdom with folly. "The woman folly is loud. She is undisciplined and without knowledge." Verse 14, "She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by." So guess what? Wisdom calls out, but so does foolishness. "Let all who are simple come in here," she says to those who lack judgment. "Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there and that her guests are in the depths of the grave," the depths of Sheol. There's no returning from that place. The foolish people, their lives end in calamity from which there's often no return. That's the imagery you want to get. So knowledge, here's something that you might want to find interesting. Knowledge remains knowledge until when? You know that you should stop at a stop sign, but if you don't apply it, it helps you nothing. So knowledge remains knowledge until it is put into action. Then it becomes wisdom. So you stop at the stop sign and a semi comes by. Wisdom. Knowledge remains knowledge until it's been applied. That's wisdom. The wise take that knowledge and use it correctly. They use it to their advantage as a benefit. That's the idea. You want to see wisdom as something perfect, the way I described it in the beginning. Luxury, space, extravagant, beneficial. That's wisdom. It's pretty easy to be deceived today. Would you agree to that? Something as simple as the media's favorite lie or tactic is something like this. They'll use the word like trending. This is trending. And guess what everybody does? We get on our devices and we find out what it is. Well, now they can see how many people have been on a certain site for any number of time. And they can say, yep, 2 million people have viewed this already. Simply by putting a statement out there, they can get people to look at it and say, see, here's the stats that show you how many people like this. When everybody was just looking for curiosity. When it wasn't really trending. It's a lie that the media uses to get what they want. They tell us something is actually popular, that it's actually good, that it's actually right. Whatever happened to truth? How do we really know when something is right or wrong? Proverbs 1:7, we've already read it, but I'll read it again. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." Do you fear God? Do you fear God? Well, that's the beginning. If you're going to find out what's right or wrong, that's got to be your beginning point. what do they call it in construction? Elevation 100? Something that never changes? Proverbs 3:18 says, wisdom is a tree of life to those who embrace her. You grab a hold of it and don't let go. Those who lay hold of wisdom are blessed. Proverbs 17:16, of what use is money in the hand of a fool, since he has no desire to get wisdom? A lot of people have a lot of problems. I'm just going to use finances as an example. A person who has made bad choices all their life financially, it helps them nothing if you go to them and pay out all their debt. Why? Because that's not what they're after. They have no desire to change. They have no desire for wisdom. That's the proverb. See how practical that is? And then Proverbs 24:7, wisdom is too high for a fool. In the assembly, at the gate, he has nothing to say. When you're reading in the Old Testament and you read in the assembly or at the gate, it's supposed to give you a picture of speaking with the elders or the leaders of the community, those who have a voice. But there, a fool has nothing to say. In other words, nothing worth saying. So the title of this morning's message is this, Wisdom, the Fool's Dilemma. I'll read a definition of foolishness for you in a moment, and then a definition of wisdom. This will help you to understand why I chose this title. The title was not meant to be blunt or hurtful. Rather, my intention was to generate an obvious contrast between the two concepts, which is what Proverbs does. So I have these quotes somewhere. I think they're at the bottom of my page here. Let me see if I can find them. So here's one for foolishness or folly. Translations of several uncomplimentary words that appear approximately 360 times throughout the Old and New Testament to describe unwise and ungodly people. Okay, so you're reading foolishness. This is what the Bible uses to describe ungodly people. I'll keep going. The words are especially predominant in the wisdom literature of the Old Testament. Persons who do not possess wisdom are called fools. Their behavior is described as folly. The picture which emerges from the biblical material is actually quite simple. Folly is the opposite of wisdom. And a fool is the opposite of a wise person. Both wisdom and folly are depicted as philosophies or perspectives on life. The religious person chooses wisdom, whereas the non-religious person opts for folly. Wisdom leads to victory, folly to defeat. Wisdom belongs to those who fear God, and the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, Proverbs 1:7. Wisdom is the essence of life. The foolish person is the one who is thoughtless, self-centered, and obviously indifferent to God. So the Bible is using wisdom and foolishness, or wisdom and folly, and contrasting them as one without the Lord. Now here's one on... That one was more so foolishness, kind of talked about both, but here's one that's dealing with wise and wisdom. Quote, a moral rather than an intellectual quality. In other words, it's not about you being smart. It's about making right choices. To be foolish is to be godless. True wisdom is a gift from God to those who ask it. Wisdom in Proverbs 1, 8 and 9 may be regarded not as mere personification of the attribute of wisdom, but as a divine person. Wisdom is a person. That's how you're to look at it. And guess what? The passage we read, that divine person is Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. In Matthew 11, the passage we read, it is the personified principle of wisdom that is meant. It's the principle of the wisdom. So those are two definitions. See if I can find my place here. So keep in mind, the Bible, wisdom, foolishness. The one with wisdom is one who looks to God. The one who with foolishness is the one who does not look to God. That's your basic contrast in the Bible. So I'm going to talk about these two things, wisdom and folly, from three points. One, from a right mind. Two, from a wrong mind. And three, from the mind of God. We'll briefly touch on each one. I purposely kept it kind of basic and simple because that's really what it's meant to be. Remember, wisdom is not to be understood as intellectual. It's not about how smart you are. It's not. It's really not. It's not about the power of your mind. Wisdom is about God and obeying Him. That's a tough sell in today's secular world, by the way. Wisdom has its origin in Him, God. Therefore, it is wise to obey Him. The origin of wisdom is in God. Therefore, it's wise to obey Him. So it has nothing to do about how intellectual you are, how much you know. It's meant to be that simple. It's that simple. So, a right mind. This is dealing with Proverbs 9, 1 through 12. What is a right mind? Well, in the simplest terms, it's the opposite of a wrong mind. Okay, that's easy, but that doesn't help me anything. The definitions that we read, they would agree with this. God does not want it to be so complicated that we can't figure it out. How can I be wise? Well, read the Bible. Okay, well, I read it, but I don't understand it. Proverbs contrasts the two. He contrasts right and wrong, wisdom and folly. A person in their right mind, a wise person, demonstrates what? Turn over to Galatians chapter 5. Some of you may know where I'm going. Galatians chapter 5. A person who is in their right mind demonstrates the fruits of the Spirit. What are you talking about? Verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. Verse 23, gentleness and self-control. Against such things there is no law. That's an interesting passage if you connect that with wisdom. And you'll find that it does connect. Turn over to Ephesians. Just one book over. Ephesians chapter 5. This is a fairly important passage when it comes to wisdom. Verses 8 through 17, it's a bit of a lengthy one, but it's so plain that I don't have to make up words. I can just read the text. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the world. Live as children of light, for the fruit of the light consists of, in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. And find out what pleases the Lord. Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. Expose them. For it is shameful even to mention what the disobedient do in secret, but everything exposed by the light becomes visible, for it is light that makes everything visible. That's why it is said, "Wake up, O sleeper, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine in you." This is speaking to believers, by the way. Verse 15, be careful then how you live. What does he connect your life with? Wisdom. Be careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. Making the most of every opportunity. Andy Stanley referred to this passage this morning. What does it mean to make the most of every opportunity? To be intentional. Why should we do it? Because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, there's the contrast, but understand what the Lord's will is for your life, for the believer's life. It's a pretty important passage when it comes to wisdom. So, what is a right mind? It is a mind that is teachable and that is unified. Turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. I just want to read two verses that were read. 1 Corinthians chapter 2. All of these passages, by the way, tie in with wisdom. I want to read verses 12 through 14. First Corinthians chapter 2, verse 12 says, "We have not received the spirit of the world, but the spirit who is from God, that we may understand what God has freely given us. This is what we speak, not in words taught by human wisdom, but in words taught by the Spirit, expressing spiritual truths in spiritual words." This is from the Word of God. "The man without the Spirit does not accept the things that come from the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness." It is completely backwards to the secular world, the wisdom that comes from God, as opposed to the wisdom that comes from men. It is completely backwards. They call it foolishness. So how are you going to make a difference in this world? How are you going to counter culture? By not doing the foolish things the world is doing. Actions. They are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them because they are spiritually discerned. Wisdom is spiritually discerned. How do we know we're in our right mind? It can be hard to tell. How do we know? Do we go with the flow? Do we go against the flow? Do we go against the grain? How do I really know what is right? It's this simple. When your choices are in line with God's choices. That's how simple it really is. But you see, that's where it becomes offensive. How do I know I'm right when my choices are the same as God's choices? Turn over to James chapter 3, talking about wisdom again. You're going to find that much of the Bible is looking at it from this perspective. James chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. There's two kinds of wisdom that he's contrasting here. Again, what we've been talking about. I'm just showing you from the scriptures, from the New Testament, what Proverbs is saying. It's very, very applicable. Verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life. Wow, that's it. If you're wise, you're going to show it by your good life. That's it. That's it. By deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. Do you see that? The way you live your life is actually, it actually stems from wisdom. If all you ever do is make bad choices, it doesn't point back to wisdom. Very, very practical. Verse 14, but if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom, again, it's in the NIV, it's in quotes, but it's meant to contrast. It's meant as a contrast. It's not wisdom from God, does not come down from heaven, but an earthly, unspiritual of the devil. In other words, that's where it originates. Verse 16, for where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder in every evil practice. Foolishness is selfishness. Did you know that? Selfishness is foolishness. Verse 17, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy, and good fruit. There it is. Wisdom is connected with good fruit. Galatians chapter 5. Impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. Wisdom is shown in its actions. Verse 17 and 18 are clear. Wisdom is from above. There is no mistaking the source. How do I know when I'm in a right mind? When I do what God wants me to do. It's that simple. How do I know what God wants me to do? It's laid out for us quite simply in the scriptures. So what does a right mind do? It exercises extreme caution. Am I careless? Or am I careful? Am I selfish? Or am I selfless? Am I loving or am I unloving? All of these things demonstrate themselves from what our source is. Here's another thing you want to keep in mind. Whether a right mind or a wrong mind, in both cases, actions speak louder than words. What you do will have a greater impact on people than if you just say it. And there's passages, we're not going to turn there, but 1 Peter 1:13 and 1 John 3:20. You could turn to. Now we're going to look at a wrong mind. Proverbs 13 through 18. What is a wrong mind? Well, it's an undisciplined mind. It's one without knowledge, according to Proverbs 9:13. Now turn over to Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8, one of the key chapters for the Christian life. Romans chapter 8, verse 5 says this. Those who live according to the sinful nature have their mind set on what the nature desires. But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their mind set on what the Spirit desires. The mind of sinful man is death, but the mind controlled by the Spirit is life and peace. This is why I said we are on an inevitable path to destruction if we live according to our own lives. The sinful mind is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. Remember, it's foolishness to the secular person, to the foolish mind. It can't. Those controlled by the sinful nature cannot please God. And then there's more passages. Romans 1:18. In fact, 1:18 through 32 help us to see some of the bad actions, the bad choices. A mind that serves the sinful lust of the flesh is a wrong mind. It's wrong. 1 John 2:15 through 17. A person who is unteachable is in their wrong mind. How do we know if we're in a wrong mind? Well, to a degree, it's safe to assume that you might be wrong at first. I could be wrong in this. It's okay to assume that. If we're not teachable, we'll never be wrong. If we're never wrong, guess who we are? You know, people go online these days to find answers. How do they determine whether those answers are right or wrong or bad or good? In most cases, they determine by whether or not they agree. That's their standard. Do you see the flaw in that? I hope you do. I've done that. I don't agree with this, therefore it must be wrong. Well, who made me the standard of all right and wrong? It's a flawed system. It's the world system, by the way. The more people that agree, the better it is. That's what our media is doing to us, by the way. Well, look, we've got the backing of the whole country. No, we don't. That's just what they're putting out there. Seeking the Lord is not the same as surfing the internet. Okay, keep that in mind. We like to call it, I'm just searching for answers. And maybe so, but be careful. Are we demonstrating evidence of the sinful nature regularly? Again, we could turn over to Galatians chapter 5, and I didn't read that on purpose because just before the fruits of the Spirit is what? We have the sinful nature. We have the sinful part of man rearing its ugly head. Galatians chapter 5, verse 19 says, "The acts of the sinful nature are obvious." This is, by the way, this is the wrong mind that I'm showing. Sexual immorality, impurity and debauchery, idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, and envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the like. I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God. These things are from those who are in their wrong mind, not wisdom, foolishness. A wrong mind is a cluttered mind. A cluttered mind is a hardened mind. 1 Timothy 4:2 talks about the seared conscience. If your conscience is seared to these things that we just read, that's a wrong mind. If you see the warning, if you see the guardrail, and you say, I'm just going to go over it anyway, that's a wrong mind. They're there for us to follow. They're there for us to obey. Wisdom is so key in this. Remember, it's not knowing about it. It's not knowing the commandment. It's not being able to recite the commandment. It's actually being able to obey it. There's a big difference. In fact, the one who knows but doesn't do is under greater judgment. Remember, wisdom is not about being intellectual. It's about doing what you understand to be right. The wrong mind, carelessness is a daily evidence of its character. The New Testament uses the word character in only one way, and it uses it in this way, that it has been proven, that it has been tested. Again, back to your actions, back to your deeds. Selfishness is evidenced in our behavior and in our self-interest. Unloving attitude is a reflection of an anti-Jesus lifestyle. This is foolishness according to the Bible. It's not complicated. So once again, actions speak louder than words, regardless of whether a person is in their right mind or their wrong mind. And now, there's a few passages, again, that help us to see that. I won't go to those, but if you want to write them down, 2 Corinthians 11:15, Galatians 6:4, and Titus 1:16. Now we're going to go over to the mind of God, and then we're going to make a conclusion. We already read 1 Corinthians 2:16, but it talks about having the mind of Christ. Here's something very, very important. This, in fact, is a clue. You have a human mind. God's mind is not like the mind of man. It's not. If you want the mind of Christ, you better know him through the scriptures. You know, people tend to live comparatively. We compare ourselves. We tend to compare ourselves with people, but we also compare ourselves with God. How do we do that? We often judge a situation before we have a clue about what's going on. If you don't know what's going on, what makes you think you have the right to judge? God does, because he knows what's going on. Recognize the impossibility of fairness in comparing yourself with God. Do yourself a favor, in other words, and stop comparing yourself with God. Try to be like him, but don't compare yourself to him. We often stand where we shouldn't. If you don't know something, it's okay to assume that you don't know. What should we do when we don't know? Well, we should search. We should inquire. We should pray and wait. Psalm 5 verse 3 says, make requests in expectation. If you're going to pray and ask for something, expect to get it. That's the idea. That's the principle behind it. Psalm 37 verse 7 says, trust in God in the midst of wickedness. Don't trust in wickedness. This, by the way, is why he can be our Savior, because he's trustworthy. He did for us, the world, humanity, what we could not do for ourselves, and the unbeliever does not know this. He has not accepted this as fact. You and I have. Therefore, it is wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's your beginning point. That's it. God is perfect in all his ways. That's God's mind, the mind of Christ. God is trustworthy. He is discreet and proven. God's actions always prove his words, and his words always prove his actions. He is perfect, Romans chapter 12.